Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sutta Uvacha Atate Samparetanam Svanam Udakam Ichitam Datum Sakrishna Gangayam Paraskritya Yuyu Striya. Sutta Goswami said, thereafter the Pandavas, desiring to deliver water to the dead relatives who had desired it, went to the Ganges with Draupadi. The ladies walked in front. Purport. To date, it is the custom in Hindu society to go to the Ganges or any other sacred river to take bath when death occurs in the family. Each of the family members pours out a potful of the Ganges water for the departed soul and walks in a procession with the ladies in front. The Pandavas who follow the rules more than 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna, being a cousin of the Pandavas, was also amongst the family members. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Lord Krishna, also in the procession, being a cousin of the Pandavas, because the mother of the Pandavas, Kunti, was the sister of his father. So the chapter is entitled Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit Saved. As I discussed before, Sutta Goswami is answering the inquiry by the sages of Namisharanya about the speakers and hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And now he's explaining about Maharaj Prickett. Because the sages of Namisharanya asked to describe his birth and his wonderful activities. So if you want to talk about Maharaj Prickett, then his life or the history of his life actually begins before his birth, when he was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, as the last remaining male descendant of the Kuru dynasty. Well, he wasn't the last descendant, but the Pandavas were still alive, but the one who could carry on the ancestry or the tradition. So we began with the last chapter as Sutta Goswami began to explain the son of Drona Punish. Drona Acharya is the guru of the Pandavas, and he's the father of Ashvatthama. And we read in the previous chapter how Ashvatthama performed the heinous act of killing the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and how he was punished by Arjuna, who cut off the jewel and the hair from his head, insulting him, therefore killing him and not killing him, because there were apparently two contradictory injunctions. One injunction was, you know, not to kill a Brahmin, the other was to kill an aggressor. He not only was a Brahmin, but the son represents the father, so he represented his own teacher. And we saw the various arguments and how Krishna sets the, on one side, Bhima saying, kill him, on the other side, Draupadi showing her natural compassion. We should save him, and we should not cause him the grief. We should not cause his mother, Kripi, the grief that I'm experiencing because my children are gone. So why should we cause her the same problem? So many arguments she gave, and then Krishna resolved it. So Krishna was introduced into the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, we had the pastime or the appearance of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, at least in terms of the pastime, comes in this chapter because it's the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna is there on the chariot, not out of... Usually when one is born or is in a position, it has to do with his karma. And karma means what's in his heart. But no, Krishna taking a so-called lowly position is his glory, because it shows his supreme personality. How he has so much affection and is so expert and loving with his devotees, that to serve his devotees, he's even willing to take a subordinate position. So Krishna is introduced, and not only Krishna is introduced, but really the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is introduced. The essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam is rasa. Rasa means perfected affection, which is found in the hearts of the devotees who are imbued with Krishna's own affectionate potency, the Ladini Shakti, which is love of Godhead. And the goal of life is actually to get that. Prema Pumartha Mahan. This was the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prema Pumartha Mahan. That prema is the greatest value, the greatest goal. So we're introduced in one sense to this prema, to this rasa, this perfected affection. As we see, Krishna's loving exchanges with his devotees. This is the essence of all the Vedas. Nigama kalpataro galitam phalam sukha mukat amrita dravyatam. When Vyasadeva was explaining at the beginning and introducing the Srimad Bhagavatam, nigama kalpataro galitam phalam, that the ripened fruit of the Vedas, the very best thing you can get for it, the perfection of the Vedas, the essence of the Vedas, is this love of Godhead. And love of Godhead is invoked by the wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord. And his most wonderful quality as a person is how much he loves his own devotees. This is also the most confidential knowledge presented in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 9. There's 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. The essence is kept in the middle, which is the end of the 9th and the beginning of the 10th. And what is that most confidential knowledge? That Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he favors his devotees, which is not a defect in his personality. It's the beauty of his personality that he reciprocates the loving service of his devotees. So here, Krishna is introduced reciprocating the loving service of the Pandavas, that he became their chariot driver, that he personally saved Arjuna when Ashvatthama released the Brahmastra weapon, that he's solving the family quarrel. Because of their intense affection, Krishna is bound by that affection. We are bound by our attachments, but Krishna is Atmaram. He has no attachments. But there's one thing that Krishna is attached to, and that's his own pleasure. And what gives Krishna pleasure? It's his pleasure potency. And what's the essence of the pleasure potency? It's love of Godhead. So Krishna himself is attached to his own pleasure, but through his own potency. And when that pleasure potency is in the heart of a devotee, Sri Krishna Karshani, Krishna even becomes attracted by that pleasure potency. Krishna even becomes subdued by that pleasure potency. Krishna even becomes controlled by that pleasure potency. Therefore, Krishna is called Madan Mohan Mohini. Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini. Because Radharani is Mahabhav Sarup. The perfection of the pleasure potency is Mahabhav. Radharani is Mahabhav Sarup. Her own form is Mahabhav. Every part of her body, every part of her personality is an expression of the most intensified love for Krishna. And therefore, even though Krishna is Madan Mohan, even though Krishna can bewilder Cupid, Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini. She's the bewilderer of the bewilderer of Cupid. Most people get controlled by lust. Krishna conquers lust. But Radharani conquers Krishna by her love. So we see the intensity of that loving feelings of the devotees, and therefore Krishna has become their chariot driver. So we're introduced to this, and now a very special part of the Srimad Bhagavatam will come. Perhaps the most special part before we get to the 10th canto, where we see Krishna's loving exchanges with his devotees and how wonderful they are. I mentioned many times that there's a quote by Jiva Goswami, where Jiva Goswami says that some people say that there is rasa in the Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami says that is not a complete or perfect statement. He said the Bhagavatam is composed of rasa. That's what's here. So we're going to be introduced to that. And this is a way in which we get that affection for Krishna. When we hear about it in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we are reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and becoming sufficiently purified from sense gratification, when we hear about it, we'll become attracted to it, and that'll become our goal. And therefore, that desire to please Krishna and have that love will come into our hearts. And that's one of the purposes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give us an appreciation for spiritual perfection and therefore begin our hankering for it. So here, Sutta Goswami is going to continue telling the story of the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which introduces us to Maharaj Prickett. And here, after cutting the hair from the head of Ashvatthama and depriving him of his wealth, then the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, because all their relatives were killed, and now even Draupadi's five sons were killed. So now we'll see they're following the rituals, that they're performing some ceremony to deliver their dead relatives, and they went to the Ganges, Ganga. Teninyodakam sarve valapya cha brisham puna apluta haripadabja rajaputra sarijale. Translation. Having lamented over them and sufficiently offered Ganges water. They bathe in the Ganges, whose water is sanctified due to being mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. Tatrasinam kurupatim dhritarastram sahanujam gandharim putra sokartam prittam krishnam chamadava. There sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and Draupadi, all overwhelmed with grief. Krishna was also there. Lord Krishna was also there. So, even the opposite, because they're all the same family. So we see even Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, Draupadi, they're all there, lamenting. Such a tragedy. Dhritarashtra, Gandhari lost 100 sons. Draupadi lost her 5 sons. So, this word, Dhritarashtra, is interesting. Dhrita means determined and Rashtra means kingdom. He was one who was determined for his kingdom, and he was actually, his determination for the kingdom was actually the cause of this distress. You know that story? He was blind from birth, and therefore, though he was the eldest son, because he was blind, he could not take the kingdom. And therefore, his younger brother, Pandu, had to take the kingdom. But this caused such a trauma in his psyche, the fact that he was deprived of the kingdom, that he could never get over it, and it remained in his psyche. And therefore, as it does sometimes, that when your consciousness is transformed by some trauma, it forces you to act irrationally instead of acting by principles. You act by your emotions and your desires. So therefore, and then when Pandu left, then his sons became the natural rightful heirs. So Dhritarashtra, you know, wanted his son to represent the kingdom, because when someone is in type of an illusion, he extends the self to his family. So in that way, he felt he could satisfy that desire to become the king. And therefore, by intrigue, he usurped the kingdom of the Pandavas to give it to his son and caused this fratricidal war. And therefore, ironically, his name is Dhritarashtra, one who is determined for the kingdom.
Santvayam asamunibir hattabandhum sarapitam Bhuteshu kalasya gatim darshayana patikriyam.
Citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings, Lord Sri Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. The stringent laws of nature. Okay, let me see. So now, Lord Krishna and the Munis, the scholars, now they begin the work of trying to pacify those who are shocked and affected by this. And they did it by philosophy. They did it by philosophy. Voyager made a very nice point about this when I was listening to him discuss this verse. I wrote it down someplace. That philosophy has to come after the emotions. If it comes at the time where the emotions are too strong, then people can't hear, because they're too much in their heart to hear philosophy. So after them lamenting for some time, then he pacified them, retried, citing the stringent laws of material nature. The Sanskrit word here is kalasya. And this will be discussed later in the next chapter. Because one person here could not be pacified, and that was Yudhisthira. Because he was not only lamenting his own relatives dying, but he was feeling responsible, he was feeling responsible for everyone that had died. Because the war was fought to enthrone him. So he felt he was the cause. Even though he had no option but to fight, he felt he was the cause. Because he was a very soft-hearted, saintly person. Even though he was a king, he was Raja Rishi, saintly king. So later, Krishna wasn't successful in pacifying Yudhisthira. Vyasadeva wasn't successful. Then to glorify their devotee Bhishmadeva, this transcendental arrangement was made where Bhishmadeva, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, lying on a bed of arrows, was able to speak incredible, wonderful philosophy to Yudhisthira in front of all the great sages present. And he pacified him also by explaining about Kalasya. Kalasya means time. Time. Krishna is represented in the material world by time. Therefore, it means that time, which transforms your material situation to give you happiness and distress, is absolute and it's good. So therefore, you have to be pacified if you have some realization of that. Absolute in the sense you cannot do anything about it, so don't worry. That you should not invest your happiness in how the material world moves, but how you react to it. It's kind of Krishna conscious version of stoicism. That's what stoicism is. You can be happy, but it's in your hands. In all circumstances. And that it's good, that ultimately it's beneficial, even if you cannot understand how it's beneficial at the time, it's actually beneficial. And whatever happens to you, you ultimately cause by your own past activities. So you should not lament why this is happening to you. You've caused it. And therefore, when you have this philosophy, as one great Vaishnava philosophy said, then you will see the environment as friendly. You will actually see the environment as friendly. And Prabhupada gives a whole summary in the purport about the stringent laws of nature. Stringent means you can't overcome them. And Prabhupada gives a summary. Therefore, human life is specifically meant for qualifying ourselves for this spiritual liberty. Unfortunately, under the influence of illusory material energy, we accept this spotlight of only a few years as our permanent existence, and thus become illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc., which are false representations created by Maya or illusion. And under the dictation of Maya, we fight with one another to protect these false possessions. By cultivating spiritual knowledge, we can realize that we have nothing to do with this material paraphernalia. Then at once we become free from material attachment. Actually, all anxiety is caused by attachment. Even the pain of death is simply our attachment to things we're going to lose. Therefore, you see sometimes when someone dies with transcendental knowledge, even though there's a kind of pain, on the same sense, ironically, there's not a kind of suffering. In other words, there's a pain, but not a depression. There's a pain, but not a hopelessness. Sometimes there's a pain that can be mixed with joy, just like a marathon runner. His body is being tortured by running, but if he sees there's only a short distance left, you know, the last 100 yards, and he's won the race, then even though his body is in so much pain, he's not suffering. So in the same sense, a devotee can be like that. Prabhupada also gave an example of someone who goes on a great treasure hunt and goes through so many difficulties. But when at the end, the last day or two before he's to come home, even though he's suffering so much from all his trials and tribulations, he sees the goal. So when you get this philosophical understanding, then even in the most difficult circumstances, there's no depression or despondency if you have a clear understanding. This clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association of devotees who are able, this is a very wonderful statement, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart and thus make one practically liberated from all lamentation and illusion. This is a summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent material laws exhibited in the form of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. The victims of war, namely the family members of the Kurus, were lamenting the problems of death, and the Lord pacified them on the basis of knowledge. Next verse.
Sadayitva jita shatro swam rajam kitavahitam gatayitva sato raja kacha sparsha shitayusu.
The clever Dhyodhana and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhisthira, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Dhyodhana were killed by him. Others also died, their duration of life having been decreased for their rough handling of the hair of Queen Draupadi. So this is an example. Sutta Goswami, very interestingly, is giving an example of this, because he was saying how the Munis and Krishna preached about the stringent laws of material nature. So now he's giving an example of this. There's laws, and if you violate those laws, then expect to suffer. And don't lament. You should only see that suffering is purifying you from the reactions of the sins that you committed that caused that suffering, and rectifying the behavior in your heart that caused that suffering. So these are two stringent laws. He usurped the land of Yudhisthira, who is saintly, and he violated the chastity of a woman. These are stringent laws of material nature. Because they're violated, then one suffers. It says here that law of karma. He kacha sparsha. He handled roughly the hair of Draupadi. There was some ceremony where, I guess, Draupadi's hair was put in a knot, or, you know, some kind of ceremony indicating her chastity, or some kind of cultural thing. And by his rough handling, he tried to disrobe Draupadi and also put her hair down. I guess that's an insult to a woman. And therefore, for that, then all the sons of Dhritarashtra and all the brothers of Duryodhana were killed. And therefore, when a lady becomes a widow, then she has to put her hair down also. This is just karma. So Prabhupada talks about these laws of nature and in terms of the protection of various members in the family, the duty of a society. So you can just read that. In the glorious days of before the advent of the age of Kali, the brahmanas, the cows, the women, the children, and the old men were properly given protection. The protection of the brahmanas maintains the institution of varna and ashram, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. The protection of cows maintain the most miraculous form of food, that is, milk for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain for understanding higher aims of life. The protection of women maintains the chastity of society, by which we can get a good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. The protection of children gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of begetting a child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhan Samskara, the beginning of pure life. The protection of the old men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for better life after death. The Prabhupada explains, to insult a chaste woman means to bring about disaster in the duration of life. Dushasana, a brother of Duryodhana, insulted Draupadi, an ideal chaste wife, and therefore the miscreants died untimely. These are some of the stringent laws of the Lord mentioned above. Text 6.
Yajayitva shramedaistam tribeyarutama kalpakai tadyasha pavanam dikshu shatamanyo ivatanot.
Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Ashwamedha yagyas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhisthira, and thus caused his virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions, like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. So, Prabhupada in the purport mentions that Maharaj Yudhisthira was fame was equal to Indra, even though Indra had performed 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, horse sacrifices, and Yudhisthira even only 3. So this is the reciprocation of the Lord for his, to his devotee. He favors that devotee. And Prabhupada discusses that in the purport. This is those who are 100% of the devotees of the Lord get the full-fledged mercy of the Lord, which is always equally distributed everywhere. So this shows the opposite, that when you surrender to the Supreme Lord, there's also like a reciprocation. The stringent laws of material nature are, in other words, when you do something wrong and you act independently of God's laws, you come under the stringent laws of material nature. When you surrender to Krishna, you come under his jurisdiction, who benedicts you.
Amantra pandu putram cha shine yodha vasham yuta dvaipayanadi bhivipray pujatai prati pujata.
Lord Sri Krishna then prepared for his departure. He invited the sons of Pandu after having been in worship by the Brahmin headed by Vyasadeva. The Lord also reciprocated greetings. So, they knew Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, the Brahmins headed by Vyasadeva. But Krishna also, because he was a Kshatriya, or in the role of a Kshatriya, and they were Brahmins, Krishna respected the Varnashram system. And Krishna reciprocated their dealings with him.
Kantum kritamatir brahman varakam rattamastita upalebe vidanvantim uttaram vayavibalam.
As soon as he seated himself on the chariot to start for Dwaraka, he saw Uttara hurrying towards him in fear. Purport, all the members of the family of the Pandavas were completely dependent on the protection of the Lord. And therefore, the Lord protected all of them in all circumstance. The Lord protects everyone, but one who depends completely upon him is especially looked after by the Lord. The father is more attentive to the little son who is exclusively dependent on the father. So this is Uttara in great fear, because what happened is Ashvatthama now is taking revenge. Whenever I hear this, I think, why don't they just kill him? You know, it was almost like in the Gulf War, where, you know, the U.S. Army, they defeated Saddam Hussein, and now again he's causing trouble. You sometimes think, well, why didn't they just finish him at the time? So he's taking revenge. And we actually see that he actually released the Brahmastra weapon. Again. What a rascal, huh? The Ashvatthama weapon again. The Ashvatthama weapon is not only like an atomic bomb and more powerful than an atomic bomb, but it's directed. It's a smart bomb. It's directed, so it's directed towards the womb of Uttara. He wants to wipe out the last, you know, the last remaining male issue of the Pandavas. So she's in fear. And in that fear, she goes towards Krishna. And this is actually, this is the really essence of the message that's going to be brought out in this chapter. That we should worship and take shelter of Krishna. Because he's the supreme controller. And he's the only one that can ultimately and actually protect us. But not only that, this is very interesting in the purport. It also shows the relationship with Krishna and the devotee. That because the devotee is dependent on Krishna, he is more attentive to his devotee. And the more we are dependent on Krishna, the more we recognize that Krishna is the supreme controller and that we are, will take shelter of his will, then the more he responds to us, the more he favors us. This is again the most confidential knowledge. Now the example that Prabhupada gives helps us to understand the importance of this in practicing devotional service. The father is more attentive to the little son who is exclusively dependent on him. So a child gets more love and care from his parents than when he gets older. I mentioned this before, that in Rasa Shastra, the study of love, the quality, each different relationship you have with Krishna has a different quality of love that's described. So the quality of love of a mother or a parent is anugraha or mercy. Mercy means kindness, undeserved kindness. So you can only give kindness to someone when they're in need. Therefore, the parents of Krishna can never see their child as God who has no need. They always see him as incapable, so that they can show kindness and it can experience that love. So when you have need and you depend on Krishna, then he naturally reciprocates, like a parent reciprocates to the child. Therefore, when you have humility, when you think, I'm okay, I don't need God, you know, who needs him, by my own power. When we have that mood of demoniac mood of conceit, arrogance, instead of the spiritual mood of humility, then we are neglected by God. But when we actually show our dependence on him, which is actually a quality of knowledge, because it's actually a fact that we are dependent on him. And sometimes he arranges the world to make us understand that we are. Then we experience his care. And by experiencing his care and attention for us personally, then we develop love for him. We begin to appreciate him. So it's one of the main ways that we develop devotion. And therefore, sometimes Krishna puts us in difficulties where the world is transforming obviously beyond our control and putting us in very difficult situations. And then one of the qualities of surrender is that we have, that we see his protection. And we see actually how we're not alone, but that God seeing us in a very helpless condition is attentive and helping us and guiding us in there. And then we develop our love for him in that way. So we just see the devotee just takes shelter, and we'll see further.
Uttarovacha pahi pahi mahayogin deva deva jagatpate nanyam twarabhayam pashye yatra mrityu parasparam.
So Uttara said, this is what she's saying, pahi pahi means protect me, protect me. O Lord of Lords, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mercy, mystics. Please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. So this is her mood, no one else. Exclusive dependence on Krishna. That is our position as his servant. He said, this is our love. We're exclusively dependent on him. Without him, everything we have is dependent on him. And when we realize that, then we can start realizing our relationship with him. It's a fact. He is our master, we're his servants. He gives us our food. He gives us our clothes. He protects us. He shelters us. And therefore, when we reciprocate in the right way, when we're in difficulty by taking shelter of him, this is the mood of the devotee. No one else but Krishna. And at the same time, he's the only one that can save us from death in this world of duality. Prabhupada discusses, in the world of duality, everyone is envious of others, and death is inevitable due to the dual existence of matter and spirit. One cannot save himself from cruel hands of death without having surrendered himself at the lotus feet of the Lord, because the duality of the material world is caused, this is the same point, by our not wanting to become a devotee and wanting to be independent of Krishna and therefore identifying with the body. And because we identify with the body, we experience death. So death is experienced actually by our failure to recognize Krishna and our position as his servant. When we do that, we're beyond duality, we're beyond death, because we realize our eternal nature. When we serve Krishna and surrender to Krishna, that is our eternal nature. And we realize that that's the real self. And we realize that the real self, is not affected by death. It's only when we don't want to surrender to Krishna and enjoy that we identify with the body and experience the duality, that the body is different than the self and therefore experience death and feel threatened by non-existence.
Abhijavati mamisha sharas tapta yasho vibhu kaman dahatu mamnata mame garbo nipatyatam.
O my Lord, you are all powerful. A fiery iron arrow is coming towards me fast. My Lord, let it burn me personally, if you so desire. But please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. So, Marge Prickett is lying in the embryo. And the mother is selfless. Protect this soul. Protect this. And it says Uttam was not ashamed to express this frankly before Lord Krishna. She was not afraid to express this frankly. have to understand, Uta was a great devotee. She was the last person remaining alive who had actually personally had darshan and saw Krishna. And therefore, Krishna's great-grandson, King Vrajanabha, had the deities of Vrindavan made, 360 of them. Uttara supervised the carving of the deities so that the forms would resemble Krishna. But here it says that she was not ashamed to express this frankly before Lord Krishna. Well, one thing, as Mother Kishori said, which was interesting, Abhimanyu died when he was 16, so how old can she be? So she's just a young girl. It's so natural, you know, and it's her duty. It's her duty. It's actually one of the stringent laws of material nature. She should give protection to her child. So it's not actually a personal duty. It's not actually a personal desire, protect my child. It's not asking Krishna something selfishly. But he's Maharaj Prickett. He's a great devotee. It's her duty. And at the same time, a devotee is allowed to see by the heart. When it's in relationship to Krishna consciousness, he can see by the heart. He can feel for a great devotee. And he can feel for others. And even if it was a personal desire, it wouldn't be outside the realm of bhakti. Because according to Rupa Goswami, anyabhilashita shunyam gana karma anabritam, it says a pure devotee, or to execute pure devotional service, is to be free from all other desires which are not natural or integral to one's person. In other words, like one desire may be, you know, I have to go to the bathroom now. That doesn't make one, you know, not to be not a pure devotee. I'm hungry. It doesn't mean that he's not a pure devotee. There's certain desires that are just integral with one's nature, or the desire for protection. Rupa Goswami says, in a life-threatening situation, if you call to Krishna, oh Krishna, protect me, protect me. It's not, you're not thinking to satisfy Krishna, you're thinking to save yourself. But it's not against bhakti. Because it's a desire, I should put it this other way, it's a desire that's not integral with you. It's not like, how can I put it? It's a desire that's, It's not a conscious desire. It's just part of your nature. Okay, I'm gonna go on. Sutta uvacha upadaya vachastasya bhagavan bhaktavatsala apandavan idam kartum yonirastram abhujita. Sutta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who is always very affectionate to his devotees, could at once understand that Ashvatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life in the Pandava family. So he realized it was Ashvatthama. And here it says that the Lord, who is Bhaktavatsala, who is very much affectionate towards his devotees. And here, an interesting point here is that the Lord was not only partial to the Pandavas because of his loving reciprocation for them, but it's also because he needed a devotee to rule the world. So therefore, he was also partial. His devotees, the Lord is impartial in every respect, but still he is inclined towards his devotees, because there is a great necessity of this for everyone's well-being. So he's destined. Oh, this verse, oh, it does say Bhaktivatsala, but where is it in the purport? It's in another purport. Okay. Taryevata muni shreshta pandava panchasayakam atmano bimukandiptam alakshyastran. Upadadu, O foremost, against among the great thinkers, Muni, Shonaka, Seeing the glaring Brahmastra proceeding towards them, the Pandavas took up their five respective weapons. So, the Pandavas each had special weapons, like Arjuna had the Gandiva bow. They also had special conch shells, described in Bhagavad Gita. Vyasanam vrikshatatesham ananya vishayatmanam sudarshanena swastrena swanam raksham yadadvibhu. The Almighty Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, having observed that a great danger was befalling his unalloyed devotees, who were fully surrendered souls, at once took up his Sudarshan to protect him. So Ashvatthama releases this ultimate, like, weapon to kill, to finish all the male members of the Pandu family. And knowing this, Krishna at once takes up his personal weapon to protect his devotees, who did not know anyone other than Krishna. Prabhupada saying, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has clearly promised that his devotees are never to be vanquished, and he behaves according to the quality or degree of the devotional service rendered by the devotees. Here the word ananya vishayatmanam is significant. The Pandavas were 100% dependent on the protection of the Lord, although they were all great warriors themselves, but the Lord neglects even the greatest warriors and also vanquishes them in no time. So again, because they're dependent, then they get that protection. Because they, when they express that need for shelter of the Lord protects them. When the Lord saw that there was no time for the Pandavas to counteract the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama, he took up his weapon, even at the risk of breaking his own vow. Although the battle of Kurukshetra was almost finished, still according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon. But the emergency was more important than the vow. He is better known as the Bhakta Vatsala, or the lover of his devotees. And thus he preferred to continue his bhakta vatsala than to be a worldly moralist who never breaks his solemn vow. So there's an ethics, a supreme absolute ethics. And the supreme absolute ethics is what brings the devotee closer to Krishna and Krishna closer to the devotee. Rasa vaisaha, the absolute truth, he is rasa. He is this affection and love. This is the supreme reality. This is God. God is enjoying. That's the supreme reality. Prabhupada always tells this story. He had this one god brother who was a German, like a brilliant type, professor type, looked like Bhaktisiddhanta. And he was looking for God in India. So he saw so many different forms. When he saw Krishna with a flute, Govinda, he said, this must be God, because if God is all-powerful, then he must be enjoying. And what does God enjoy? He enjoys the love of his devotees. So, this is the highest reality. And therefore, worldly morality is not the highest ethics. So therefore, even though Krishna made a vow, and one should be strict to his vows, more important was to save his devotee than maintain that vow. And he'd be rather be known as that, because that's actually a higher platform. Bhaktivatsala. Antastha sarvabhutanam atmayogeshvaro hari samaya vinogarbham vairatya kurutantave. The Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as the Paramatma. And as such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy. So he's Yogeshwara. He's the master of all mysticism. Definition of God, according to Rupa Goswami, is that you cannot define God without understanding as inconceivable potency, as mentioned in Isha Upanishads. Tadejati tadnaijati tadure tadvantike dirantarasya sarvasya tad usarvasya bhayata. The Lord walks and doesn't walk. He's near and far. He's inside and out. So Krishna is in everyone's heart. So he manifests inside Maharaj Prickett at the same time he was standing outside watching at the same time. Kunti will mention this later. So he covered the embryo of Uttar by his personal energy. And whereas the Brahmastra was actually thrown. There's one commentary, I think, later on somewhere. I think Prabhupada discusses it, that actually the body was actually burnt. And then again, Krishna manifests the body. And therefore, because Maharaj Prickett saw Krishna manifest, even before he took birth in the womb of his mother, when he saw that form, he was always hankering for that form. It's like we like to see attractive forms. But Krishna is the supreme attractive form. And when you see that form, you can be satisfied with nothing else. Just like previously Narada Muni. When he got darshan of the Lord and then he lost it, then he realized that he really increased his desire. Two more verses today. Yadyapyastram brahma shiras tvamogam chapritikara kriyam vaishnavam Teja asadhya sama shamyad brigudvaha. O Shanaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama was irresistible without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. So, irresistible, but ultimately, Krishna is the supreme power. Mamam stayetarascharyam sarvascharya mayechute ya idam maya devya sajatya vatti hantyaja. O Brahmanas, do not think this is to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. So even though this is so amazing, don't think the Lord has any limitation in what he does and any limitation in protecting his devotees. Why? Well, by his own energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he is unborn. Just like in the prayers of the personified Vedas, when they discuss how the Supreme Lord is in Devaki's womb, they say, what's so surprising? The Supreme Lord is controlling everything, is pervaded everywhere, but yet he's entered into every atom. So we should not be surprised, because Krishna has inconceivable potency. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions? Thanks.
I just wrote a couple things down, not exactly questions. Well, first I just wanted to say about Draupadi and her hair. Because I heard from Huda Nandamaraj.
Yeah.
He was explaining that Draupadi was actually in an unclean state and she was in the women's apartment when they sent Dushyant to get her.
Yeah.
And so her hair was down. It's not like he pulled her hair down.
Uh-huh.
But Prabhupada said that a chaste woman never leaves her. The only person that can see her hair down is her husband. So a woman is always supposed to bind her hair in front of other men. So she, first of all, she was unclean. Second of all, she put her hair down and she was brought into the assembly like that. And they pulled her by the hair. So, and then Bhima took that vow.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to say.
And you said something about Dhritarashtra's name, but There's something I always wondered about in the Bhagavatam, is how everybody is so perfectly named. Because like Dhritarashtra, that was his nature. That was his problem. Duryodhana means somebody who gives everybody pain. Who would name their son that? But somehow they all have these names.
I think these names, first of all, they probably have other names, other meanings. And they're taken that way. I would say that sometimes when a guru names his disciple, you know, he sees his nature. Prabhupada gave the example of someone being named Padmalochan, you know, because Padmalochan means lotus eye. And like you could see it the opposite way. The parent had a child who was blind and named him Padmalochan or lotus eyed one out of affection. But who would give their son like a terrible name?
All the bad guys have bad names.
You know, this is a arrangement by Krishna. You know, somehow or other, what's the difficulty of him inspiring everyone like this? And somehow arranging that. I'm sure they have other types of name. But Dhritarashtra is not one who's determined for a kingdom. You know, you can name your son, you know, Yudhisthira, one who's fixed in battle. You know what I'm saying? It's not so bad.
Well, with those three, at least with Dhritarashtra and Pandu, Vyasadeva named them, even before they were born. He named them at conception.
Yeah. Oh,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Duryodhana, you know. Like, and there's other examples I can't think of right now, but there's a lot of examples.
Duryodhana? Dur means difficult.
Yeah, difficult or
And what does Yodhana mean?
It also means pain.
Well, these things can be, you know.
Yeah, they can probably be broken up in different ways.
Yeah.
But Dana needs to give. So I've heard other people say that Duryodhana, that's what it means, one who gives others pain or difficulty.
Well, it could also mean a great warrior.
Yeah.
You know, one who gives others difficulty. It's also a glorification, depending on how you take it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I have something to say about the last things you were saying.
Okay, I'll remember tomorrow. Okay, we'll end here.